Welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everyone is having a wonderful day today. And how are you doing today, Dad?
Austin, I'm doing absolutely wonderful, for this is the day the Lord hath made, and I will rejoice and I will be glad in it. And it's really warm, but I'm still happy. And it's one of those things. It's back to almost, well, it's August now, so this is that month in Florida that if you don't want to do your vacation, this is the month not to do your vacation in Florida, especially if you want to go stand at the Rat or Disney, as I call it, Rat being Mickey Mouse. If you want to go visit the Rat, at that point, I would not go to Disney World at all. I would go lay on a beach somewhere under a cabana, basically in the shade with a fan, sipping lemonade. That's as far as it would go. It is toasty down here. Florida is better to come down in November, December, January, or February. Those are the months that we have all the snowbirds come down, and for a good reason. Now, yesterday, I got an email from one of my pastor friends. He's actually on the executive pastoral council for President Donald Trump. He's a huge name with Donald Trump, knows Donald Trump, basically is in contact with the White House all the time. And he sent me an audio tape, basically, SoundCloud.com, online via email, of a show he wanted me to listen to. Now, let me tell you about the show real quick. The guy who's doing this show is Michael O'Fallon. It's called The Causes of Things. It's Episode 5, Christianity in a Postmodern Crisis, a Sovereign Nations podcast hosted by Michael O'Fallon. I'm going to repeat that for you so you have to play this thing backwards. The Causes of Things, Episode 5, Christianity is in a Postmodern Crisis, a Sovereign Nations podcast hosted by Michael O'Fallon. Now, real quick, let me tell you about Michael O'Fallon. Michael O'Fallon works with major ministries around the country as far as helping them with fundraising, helping them like doing tours and that kind of stuff. He's just a big guy who knows all of the major ministries and what they do and how they generate funds and basically maintain their ministries. He's huge. He's one of these guys that knows like everybody who's anyone, and they pretty much work with him. In case you guys didn't know that, you know that. Well, a problem happened. Michael found out that a bunch of the people that he was working for and with were basically doing things they shouldn't ought to do. They were taking George Soros money for their churches with the understanding that they had to hammer Trump, promote liberalism, promote basically all kinds of horrible things that the socialists want, including open borders. And in doing so, George Soros and his groups would pay many of their facilities off. One huge minister got $100 million from the George Soros Foundation, which, as we know, is a Rockefeller Rothschild Foundation, which is what it is, run by the Rothschild Banking Network. Rothschild, Rockefeller being another cutout for the George Soros, and the George Soros being a cutout again for the Rothschild banking cartel. Yeah, I'm going to read you part of what he said, and you got to listen to the podcast. That's why I gave it to you twice. It's about an hour long, and I think it's 39 minutes, so it's not too bad. And so what's interesting about it is it really names names, days, places, the money, everything that they received, and he threw a lot of his own personal clients under the bus. In fact, he told my pastor friend that by doing so, he may actually lose many of the clients and many of the ministries that he's talking about. And if you were wondering why, and let me tell you, let me share with this real quick with you. I got to say this in a way that makes sense. I've got a friend of mine who's got a mega church. I'm not mentioning any names here. Got 25, 30,000 members, multiple campuses around the country. And he's a great guy. And I've known him for 10 years. Very, very, very successful, extremely good speaker, funny as all get out, and he has, a huge revenue stream coming in every month in order to maintain like 5, 6, 7, whatever he has now, different full campuses with campus pastors on every center, and basically has this huge following on YouTube, huge following on terrestrial TV. But he doesn't ask for money on the TV, which is kind of interesting. He just sends out free stuff, and he has a huge base now. And he told me years ago Donald Trump had asked to speak in his church back in 2016 during the election process and have a huge rally at the church. And my buddy told me he could not do that because his church was primarily African American, and that the African Americans were primarily Democrat, and that they weren't allowed, if he brought in Donald Trump, who's a Republican, that he would hemorrhage he would hemorrhage members. I had seen this all earlier back, you know, it's about 6 years ago when we had the other election in which, you know, McCain was running and with Sailor Sarah Palin. And I remember, or Romney, or whoever it was, I don't remember anymore, whoever was running against the gay Kenyon on the second term. And what was interesting about it is I had a friend of mine who had a church, and I was attending the church, and he started really promoting the Republican ideals. And he had a lot of African-American members, a lot, and probably a third. And after about 6 weeks of him hammering this message, he pretty much lost all the African-Americans. I mean, I'm talking like 90% of them left. Austin was there. He saw it, too. And it was crazy. And I thought, wow. So when my buddy told me that he couldn't have Trump speak at his church because he'd lose too many members, it would cost him too much revenue, I kind of understood that. But guys, here's the problem that we have. When you have a church that's filled with Democrats who basically have very strong socialist ideology, who want open borders, who want more taxation, who want more government regulation, who want the Bernie Sanders type of life or the Communist Manifesto kind of life, the life that Stalin and Lenin promoted, you know, it's an anathema, it's an oxymoron to being a Christian. If you don't believe in the sanctity of human life and you believe that we can have abortions up to 9 months, up to basically in the birth canal, and you claim to be a believer in God, and yet you're openly condoning infanticide and the killing of babies, you know, and you don't talk against that in your pulpit, you know, there's a problem with that. I mean, I know I'm rattling a lot of toes right now. I got that. I got a lot of people going, oh, I can't believe he's talking about this. I'm just telling you. I'm being straight with you guys. You know, and I always tell folks, I mean, if you can do a better job on a talk show, I'll hook you up. I'll show you how to set up a talk show and do this every day. Because the reality is, this is what's going on in a lot of these churches that have large African American congregations. They simply don't want to go in and talk about what's going on with the borders. And Soros is telling these churches to promote open borders, promote mass migration. And he's going in, if they do so, and they're bad-mouthing Trump, he goes in and pays off a lot of their facilities and just gives them money through grants. In fact, he had put $1 billion into a pool for these guys that they could get money from. Now, I went to a conference here a few months ago, and one of the speakers, it was a Christian conference, and it was for pastors. He basically gets up and he starts talking about white privilege during the presentation. I haven't really told you guys this, but it was pretty rough on me, and I thought to myself, what the heck am I listening to? Who in the world is this clown? And I'm talking about, you know, all the problems that we've had with being white. And this is one of their ideals they push, is the white privilege. A lot of the guys are going so far as to saying that, you know, not in that group that I was in, but in other groups around the country, that whites need to stop having babies and that basically whites just need to self-extinguish. And we're doing a pretty good job of that anyhow. I mean, we're doing that voluntarily. I mean, if you don't have at least three children, you're not a successful biological specimen because you can't even reproduce yourself and your wife because you have to take into account the loss of an infant or loss of a child. So you end up in a situation where if everybody just has two children, the white population self-extinguishes. That's just what happens biologically. So you really need three kids in order not to have, because you can't have a 2.1, 2.2 children. You got to have number three. So the crazy thing about all of this stuff is that, you know, this guy is telling the truth, and he lost a lot of his customers because of this. Let me read you what he says about his podcast. Let me read this to you real quick. The Protestant Evangelical Church has been a massive conservative force for the past 50 years. With nearly 40 million members, evangelicals are normally politically active, voting for their morals as well as for the preservation of our republic. But something has happened over the past 7 years or so that has radically changed the priorities and the mission of the largest evangelical seminaries, including the Southern Baptist Group, by the way, which I attend, and churches in the United States. Seminaries previously focused on scriptural proclamation are now focused on teaching their future pastors postmodern concepts such as critical race theory and intersectionality. Churches throughout the nation are pushing progressive agendas along with classes that feature the teaching of unconscious bias training along with the deceptive ideology of white privilege. This is what he's writing. This is what he talks about in this business. You've got to listen to this audio. Faithful church members are being encouraged to reject constitutional conservatives and to embrace open borders, reject normal patriotism, and embrace progressive concepts and social justice policies normally reserved for radical socialist or open society adherents, and also, I'm adding this, hardcore communist ideologists. Rejecting any respect or support for President Donald Trump, the new progressive Christian front has an obvious political edge, while stating it is apolitical, which isn't true, the deconstructionist Christian movement turns out articles, videos, conferences, and tweets that promote progressive policies such as open borders, equity-based concepts, and social justice endeavors, like, you know, Black Lives Matter. What is happening and why is it happening? On this episode, The Causes of Things, we will explore the genesis of this massive paradigm shift within the Christian church and why it's happened. And he puts a whole bunch of links at the bottom of this article, asks you to check the links out while he's talking about them on the article so you know everything he's saying is accurate. Now, again, I say this. He threw his own clients, these progressive churches that he works with, under the bus and straight called out their pastors because he said he couldn't, basically, he can't deal with this anymore because it's destroying church. These are the feel-good churches. These are the churches that you go to, you don't hear about Christ crucified. These are the churches that don't talk about the blood of Jesus. These are the churches that don't give you a hard message as far as salvation. Raise your hands, come forward. We want to talk to you in the back room, pray with you, and basically teach you the new way to go with the new members class and teach you the basic fundamentals of Christianity. All we want you to do is be happy, 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 because God is good, which He is. But they forget to tell you that God's also a jealous God, and He's also sovereign, and He's also the same yesterday, today, and forever. And it also forgets to tell you that the God will not be mocked. He's not a man that He should be mocked. That He's going to do what He says He's going to do throughout the New and Old Testament, because, guys, it says not one jot, not one tittle shall be taken away. But these churches have found that if they play almost hard rock music in some of the churches, and some of them actually do play hard rock secular music in these churches. I mean, I'm talking like Def Leppard. I mean hardcore hard rock, just a satanic music in the churches. It appeals to the masses of the people that are going to that particular church, and that it helps to bring people in. But the reality is Christ crucified is not being preached to most of these churches. One of the largest ones that had bases in South Carolina, and then the pastor went completely Looney Tunes on antidepressants and all everything else, and ended up leaving the church with a whole bunch of debt. And the craziest thing about all of this stuff, and this huge church had like 30, 40, 50,000 members. And the craziest thing about all of this stuff, guys, is when you have a pastor in the pulpit who can't handle his own finances or can't handle his own emotions or is having to take Prozac or Zoloft or some type of other problem because he's so depressed, should he really be in the pulpit preaching and teaching the Word of God and telling you how not to be depressed? I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. Now, you guys can say, oh, I can't believe Judge just said that. Well, I just said it. I'll say it again. Some pastors need to have a sabbatical. They need to go take a break. Some of the guys get burned out. Over 70% of pastors get depressed, stay depressed, get, you know, wish they'd never gone into the ministry. I've told you stories about that with people that I've personally been involved with. And this is what's going on right now in mainstream Christianity. That's why when he said in the video, in the audio yesterday when I listened to it, that one of the top guys, one of the top Baptists from the Southern Baptist Convention is involved in this. And is involved in this progressive movement. It tells me how these people have done it with money. See, they couldn't do it with just hardcore atheists. They couldn't do it. They had to sneak in the back door, number one, with George Soros, number two, with the Scofield Bible, number three, now they're paying off their churches, and number four, they're basically telling them that if they pay off their churches and give them all this money, there are strings attached, and if they don't do the strings, basically, I guess either they have to repay the money, which I don't know that, I'm a speculation on my part, or they basically don't get any more money. And when you put up a free tap of money to all of these people coming in, and suddenly, you know, these people have certain things they have to do, certain cookie counter preachers, certain cookie counter churches, when you go to these churches, the entire stage is painted black and all they have is smoke coming out of the doggone side of the stage and mirrors everywhere and all this stuff. I mean, I'm not saying that's not entertainment. I'm not even saying that's not fun to go to. I'm not even saying that the preacher's not good. I'm not even saying that the worship and praise is phenomenal, because in many cases, all of those things are great. But what I'm saying is this, you gotta hear about Christ crucified. Why have so many mainstream denominations literally taking the blood of Jesus out of their hymnals? They don't want to sing about the blood, you know, the blood-bought Savior. They don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about happy, 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 happy. And again, it's like Joel Osteen. I'm just going to say this, and I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. So you guys, save the letters and don't send them to me. I don't look at Joel Osteen as the minister of the gospel. I know a lot of you guys like him. A lot of you guys don't like him. I don't see him as that. I see Joel Osteen as a motivational speaker. That's how I see him. I see him as someone who's going to go out and promote his agenda, promote what he wants to promote from the Word of God, and sell a bunch of books and get his 10, 12, 15, 20 million dollar advances from the books that he has, and basically do that and use his church as a venue for all of that. Okay, now that's how I can deal with this. If that's who you have as your spiritual leader, however, he really needs to make available to the church other things than that same exact sermon he does every week. I've listened to Joel a bunch. I mean, I know Joel, and I've listened to him every single time. Every single sermon is different, but every single sermon is the same. It's the weirdest thing. I have no idea how he comes up with so many stories of his life and how he ties all these stories together, because I really very rarely ever hear him talk about multiple stories over and over and over again. But he always has somebody either writing his sermons for him that can weave in certain stories of his life, where he adds those in after the sermon's been printed and basically adds them in. And then I know what he does. He does the same sermon four or five times. Then by the time you see it on TV, it's memorized. He doesn't use a teleprompter. I'll give the boy credit for that. He's very, very good at memorization. And by the time he's done this four or five times, he has every week a different sermon. Now, mind you, I love hearing old Joel Osteen talk. And I love the worship and praise at, you know, at his church. I've been out there. He's actually contacted me and asked me to come out to meet me, because he had preached my Eat, Drink, and Be Healthy program one time from the pulpit. And that, to me, I'm happy he did that. Then he said he sold more CDs on that particular service that he had done than any of the CDs he had ever sold. And I'm like, well, great. I'm glad I got, you know, paid for that. So, I mean, I'm just sort of kidding. Well, kind of. Well, no, not really. I'm not kidding at all. But it was okay, because to me, I'd rather have the word get out of the health stuff. I told you other people have done that to me before. And I had the other day, I had one of the top alternative radio TV guys. I sent him a Ford, and it was a Ford, and I didn't know that. So somebody sent it to me, and I forwarded it to this guy, and he emailed me back with a scathing letter how they had basically used something he had said and not quoted him and not put his name to it. I'm not going to tell you the name of this guy, because you'd all know who he is. My response was like nothing. I didn't even respond to the email. I just deleted it. I thought, whatever, man. Get a life. You know, I've been quoted so many times. Had my stuff stolen so many times. I've had multiple doctors straight steal titles and information from me and write books off my CD sets. I kid you not. Austin knows it's true. And I just laugh about it. I just laugh about it, because, you know, the whole thing is this. What am I going to do about it? Am I going to sue them all? What's the point? I don't care. To me, as long as Christ is being preached, Christ crucified is being preached, resurrection of Christ, and he's the Savior of the Lord. It's like Paul said, people are going out for the sake of the gospel, trying to make money on the gospel. He says, forget it. As long as Christ crucified is being preached, resurrection is being preached, let them do what they want to do. At least Christ is being preached. That's how I look at it. People copy my stuff I do all the time off the Bible. I'm okay with that. People copy all my health stuff all the time. I'm okay with that too. I don't care. Now, I don't want them straight plagiarizing me. I don't like that either. But it's one of those things, guys. We're all in this together. But guys, I've been rambling about this because I'm so frustrated about this thing with the churches now. Get yourself in a really good Bible-based church in your area. Try to avoid the TV evangelists, and please don't send them money. Please, please don't send them money. If you're going to send money to anywhere, send it to the local church. That way, if you need a pastor to come see you in a hospital, to come pray with you, he can pray with you. You know, one of the saddest things to me, Austin, is when somebody has to get a rent-a-preacher for a funeral, and they pay the preacher a couple hundred bucks, and he comes and does the funeral for the person who's dead. He never even knew the person when they were alive. He doesn't know if they're saved or if they're going to hell. He has no idea. But he's like a rent-a-cop. He's like a rent-a-preacher. And when you have to have that for your funeral, that's the pits. It's really the pits. All right. Okay, that's enough of all that. Austin, what's your next story, and what do you think?
Oh, there was definitely some excellent points in that, though. But one thing that I wanted to basically touch base on was a article that came out here. Now, I'm talking about basically nutrition. I had a couple nutrition articles I didn't get to yesterday. So I got everything together here. Basically, there is a group, a company basically, that has done a test and survey of a lot of these big major food chains across the country, including Costco, Kroger, Albertsons, Safeway, Publix, Walmart. And so they wanted to go out and basically keep working on this antibiotic initiative, because so many foods, so many meats, especially chicken and beef, are still so just overloaded with antibiotics, it's ridiculous. Well, they found that these massive grocery stores still failed when it came to selling antibiotic-free chicken to the public. They said all five retailers fell short in a survey conducted by the Natural Resources Defense Council, reported by Organic Authority. They said each one received a grade of a D when it came to their lack of progress on the promotion of antibiotic practices and their ability to provide antibiotic-free chicken. I said the grading, according to the following categories, was based on policy, consumer education, brand score, actual antibiotic use, and certification. They said the raw totals of these categories was 55 points, and Walmart received a 20. Albertsons got a 21.5. Publix got a 21. Kroger got an 18, and Costco got a 22. They said helping consumers and making informed choices, Publix actually was at the top, however, as they had necessary signage in all their stores and all their branches had displays that informed consumers of product and produce with responsible antibiotic policies. And the issue that nobody is still seeming to get with this, because a lot of these sales are still through the roof, and we have to start voting with our dollars with this, because, guys, there's no excuse anymore to have these chickens that are just absolutely plump full of antibiotics and hormones and steroids when they're growing them. It's ridiculous. I mean, I remember I went to Sam's Club a couple years ago, and they had a big sale on chicken breast. And I remember I walked past the freezer thing they had, you know, the open top freezer, and it was like chicken breast on sale for like $3.99 a pound, $2.99 a pound. I mean, it was stupid cheap. And I looked at them, and I looked down, and I mean, I'm talking, these are like 3 and 4 pound chicken breasts per side. Like half a chicken breast was like 3-4 pounds a piece. These were some of the most, I mean, the largest bloated, sizable chicken breasts I've ever seen. You could tell just by looking at them, they weren't natural. They were just loaded up with every single hormone and antibiotic known to man to basically keep these things alive long enough to slaughter them. And that's why they were so cheap, because they were selling it by the pound. And so even one pack, you know, was still $25, $30 because of the weight of this chicken breast, because they were so pumped up. This is something that's causing a big issue with what we've seen over the years with the antibiotic resistance, because rather than fixing these chickens or giving them healthy food and keeping them healthy, antibiotics are basically more commonly used to, A, promote quicker growth to the animals, to keep them healthier long enough to basically slaughter them and prevent them from getting deathly sick. According to Organic Authority, they said this practice allows antibiotic resistance bacteria to thrive, which in turn is extremely harmful to humans and animals alike over the long run. And so this is just something I wanted to bring up, because the way we get this to these companies to basically listen to us more is do your research, get certified organic chicken, or get chicken at least that you know is basically antibiotic free, because this stuff is not healthy whatsoever when you start putting it in your body, especially with the stuff that is infested with antibiotics and hormones, Dad.
You know, Austin, that's a problem that we've had. I mean, we have a real problem with a lot of grocery stores. I mean, especially the unscrupulous ones. I'm not going to name any names here. Some of them actually inject water into the meat. You think, do they really? Yep. I said, yeah, they really do. And then with that clumps them all up. So if you shoot 6-8 ounces of water into a chicken breast, you know, and you just make it saturated with water, it swells up because it's a muscle, right? It swells up. And you're thinking, oh, wow, this is great. And, of course, a lot of them put bleach on their meats, bleach them out, yep, before they put them in the shell. I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff, guys. That's why we tell you all the time, do your best to stay organic. Real quick article here on why IQ scores are dropping every generation since the 70s. Well, they want us down there with Somalia. That's what they want. But Harvard researchers are warning that fluoride can lower IQ scores both in the water and also in the of toothpaste. Now, also, you have prenatal exposure to diazinine and chlorotheose is associated with lower intelligence. This is basically the hormones or the chemicals they put, not the hormones, but the chemicals they're putting on the food and on crops. Exposure to lead increases the risk of learning disability. IQ losses from mercury it also carry a heavy price tag, and aluminum cookware can release a hodgepodge of neurotoxic metals along with vaccinations that contain aluminum. So these are just simple things that we're talking about. Like yesterday, I talked to a friend of mine, and he didn't feel good. It was very heavily overcast. And I told him, I said, well, one of the reasons it doesn't feel good is we're in a low pressure zone now, and our cells, you know, operate through passive diffusion. We have like one sort of pressure on the inside of the cell, one sort of pressure on the outside. We have semi-permeable membranes that nutrients and B vitamins are gradually diffused into the cell walls. And I said, the problem with all that is if we have low pressure on the outside, low pressure on the inside, there's no passive diffusion, and you don't get the same nutrient density or even sugar intake or glucose intake into your cells, and you feel sluggish, you want to sleep. That's why you want to sleep all the time when it's raining, because of that. So the same thing's true with the moon. The tides affect us. They affect our moods. In fact, that's why they call people during a full moon who go nuts lunatics. That's the term they used to use when a person was basically going nuts in a full moon. I remember one time Austin broke his foot on a dirt bike. And don't say we shouldn't be riding dirt bikes. I got that. We don't. They're sold, okay? He's like 14 years old, turned his foot backwards, literally turned his left foot backwards, snapped the bone in his leg, and it's on a Friday night, and it's a full moon, and he's in the hospital, and all he could hear was screams all over the hospital. It was Lakeland General. It's the hospital from hell as far as I'm concerned. That and Winter Haven Hospital is the second little hospital from hell. I mean, you know, the only good hospitals in our area is like Celebration Florida Hospital. They're phenomenal. And so it's just one of those things. People get nuts when it's full moon because of the pressure gradients. That's why people feel different during different times of the year, during the rainstorms and all the other things. It's because of passive diffusion in the cell membranes. That's just simple biology that people need to learn, but they aren't. Now, one more thing. Science is now confirming that CoQ10 and selenium actually lower the risk of dying by cardiovascular disease by up to 40%. These are original studies that were done, and guys, that's a big deal. And it says past use of CoQ10 and selenium continue to reduce heart disease risk 12 years later. And see, this is so important because CoQ10 increases the production and utilization of cellular energy and allows the body to basically keep really hard and strong heart muscles. And when a person is on a statin drug, the CoQ10 pretty much stops. It takes a few years or a few months or a few weeks, depending on their levels of CoQ10, for the heart muscle to become completely devoid of CoQ10. And then you start having all these heart attacks because of the fact that you're not getting enough CoQ10. If any of you are still out there taking antidepressant drugs or anti-cholesterol drugs, it's so important that your doctor who you're working with tells you that you need to be on CoQ10. And if he doesn't, if he's got you on a statin drug, if he hasn't told you to be on CoQ10 as a supplement, you need to change doctors. I'm just telling you straight up. Oh, by the way, warning, a synthetic antidepressant has now been linked to raise the risk of premature death, these antidepressants. Warning, out of 375,000 study participants on antidepressants, one-third of these people died prematurely. Reason for that, serotonin assists in numerous bodily processes, not just mood. When we start messing with those serotonin levels, it can actually cause harmful side effects in these people that are taking these selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors also. So again, natural protocols to feel good, keeping your brain healthy. We have a healthy brain program on the website. They're phenomenal. I take those supplements on a regular basis because, guys, it's one of those things. You're not going to get too many B vitamins. Quite frankly, they're water soluble. In fact, I told my friend who basically had the problem with the energy, he dropped real hard with that the other day when it was cloudy. I said, well, tomorrow in the morning, take 4 B vitamins. This front's going to be here for a bit. And I said, that'll make a difference because it increases the plasma concentration of the B vitamins. And then when the weather clears back up and the high pressure comes back, you can go back on 1 B complex or 2 B complex a day, and you don't have to take 4 a day. And he did that. He called me back and goes, man, that made a big difference. I said, yeah, I know, because you're increasing the amount of cellular diffusion because you're increasing the concentration of B vitamins in the bloodstream, which increases the amount of B vitamins that are going into your cell, which increases the ability of mitochondria in the cell to create energy through ATP. And the only way it can do that if it has B vitamins available, because they act like a catalyst. They're needed in that chemical reaction. And without B vitamins, it's like trying to run a car that runs on gasoline on diesel, or a car that basically runs on gasoline disconnecting several of those spark plugs and saying, I wonder why this thing's not running right. You know, I pulled a couple of plug wires off. What's wrong with it? That's what happens without B vitamins. Your body can't produce the energy that it needs. What do you think, Austin? What's your next story?
Yeah, that's excellent info. And one thing to add to that, you know, because the B vitamins that we carry are so bioavailable and they work so effectively, you know, the dosage that when people start taking them at that level, you know, for 3 or 4 for a couple of days, it makes such a difference. That the ultimate multiple and the B complex, I get probably more feedback off those products than anything else. Primarily because A, we sell the most of those. Those are some of our top selling products. But B, a lot of people are so deficient in a lot of those nutrients, especially B vitamins, that when they actually get real, true bioavailable B vitamins in their system, it just changes the entire way of how they feel. You know, and if it's something where you're trying to consolidate or do something just for the whole family on a budget, the ultimate multiple powder in and of itself is a great place to start because that's an incredibly strong formula that still contains a lot of the B vitamins and the whole family can take it at one time. You know, the can of it usually has a pretty significant amount. Most 2 adults can usually get about 2 months out of 1 can. And I know a lot of families that have their kids take it, the adults take it, and they can get a month on it for basically basically almost the whole family. And when you factor in the level of nutrients and the quality that you're getting with that many people taking it and getting one can, really, really effective products. I mean, the multiple powder, the B complex, those are always the base. That's why on the website you see we always have the basic healthy lifestyle kit on sale all the time, because that right there contains the ultimate multiple capsules, the B complex, the C, the D, and the omega-3 fats. That is really a base platform that pretty much any protocol really should start on to some extent, because I get emails all the time. People are like, where should I start? Where should I do this? Where should I do that? The multiple vitamin, absolutely right there. If you're wanting to go a little bit further, the basic healthy lifestyle kit, and then a lot of other supplements you can add in that are specialty supplements for very specific things that you want to add into, say like the alpha lipoic acid and, you know, the resveratrol. Those are all great, but really you want to focus on your base to begin with, especially if you're just starting off with a lot of these nutrients. Also, too, in other news, I thought this was pretty crazy. I saw an article that came out again from Dr. Ziming Yao, who's basically, he's had multiple studies that have been published basically on vaccines. He's actually the author of 33 peer-reviewed studies. He's the lead author of three of the most biological important studies ever done, and now analyzing the hepatitis B vaccine. Well, he just released another basically review this week, another peer-reviewed journal. In the study, Dr. Yao and his colleagues sought to confirm of what they have already previously discovered, that they already knew that neonatal hepatitis B vaccination induced hippocampal neuroinflammation and behaviors impairments in mice. They wanted to make sure that they understood the exact mechanism of action within the brain that was causing all this damage, and that's exactly what they did. They learned that overexposure to the cytokine IL-4 produced the same reaction in mouse brains that giving them the hepatitis B vaccine did. They said the neurological and neurobehavioral impairments induced by neonatal hepatitis B vaccine that involves a downregulation of those receptors in the hippocampus was the exact same with the vaccination. So the conclusion, he said, these findings suggest that the clinical events involving neonatal IL-4 overexposure, including neonatal hepatitis B vaccination and asthma in human infants, may have the same adverse effects on that type of development. And so basically what's going on here is, he said, the Informed Consent Action Network explained how there's only been two hepatitis B vaccination studies ever done on humans as far as to see the side effects. Only two of them have ever been tested, both of which were tested without any placebo group, and both of them only had 4 or 5 days of observation on the children who received the vaccine. They did not go past that at all. They said there are only two Hep B vaccines licensed for one-day-old babies in the United States. One was made by Merck, the other GlaxoSmithKline. Imagine that, those two guys. They said Merck's hepatitis B vaccine was licensed by the FDA after trials which solicited adverse reactions only 5 days after the vaccination. Similarly, GlaxoSmithKline was licensed by the FDA after trials that solicited only 4 days after the vaccination. Neither one of these trials had any placebo group whatsoever. The doctor goes on to say, he goes, the follow-up periods of 4 or 5 days are not nearly long enough to detect possible adverse effects such as autoimmune, neurological disorders, seizures, or death. Worse is it, since neither of these clinical trials used a control group, it was impossible to scientifically determine if any adverse reaction in the limited 4 or 5 day safety period was even caused by the hepatitis B vaccine being evaluated. It's reasonable to say that the way the Hep B vaccine was tested and the way the Hep B vaccine causes brain damage, as we found in this study, means our health authorities have no idea how much brain damage hepatitis B vaccine is causing to our children. So
that's right.
I thought this is a really, really, really intense article. You can read through a lot of the very specific scientific stuff on it if you would like. But this guy calls it out. He's been overtly just adamant about figuring out what's going on. As he said, the hepatitis B vaccine is probably the most toxic vaccination to children because of how young these children are, how they are literally jabbed with this injection within minutes to hours of coming out of the mother, which is unheard of in any type of research in the past, that you would inject a baby child that early with a vaccination, especially when you already know in most cases that the mother is not Hep B positive. Majority of women that are basically under the care of a doctor, that are under the care basically of a nurse practitioner, that are under the care of a midwife, they test that. Lana actually, when they did blood work on Lana regularly when she was going through the midwife, they tested her twice for hepatitis B while she was pregnant, just to be sure, and then to be double sure, to make sure she didn't have hepatitis B. So if we're testing them, we know the mothers aren't Hep B positive when they're basically about to have the baby. Why in the world are we injecting these newborn babies with some of the most toxic compounds known to man?
Eugenics.
And these tests have never been long-term studied, Dad. 4 days for Merck and 5 days for GlaxoSmithKline is all they gave them for basically a trial to see how long the side effects, if any, occurred, and then they still had no control group or placebo group to see what the difference was. Absolutely insane to me.
Okay, let me explain to you what Austin's saying here. This is kind of complicated, but it makes a lot of sense. Usually when you run a control study like this, you'll have a group of kids that are given hepatitis B, a group of kids that are not given hepatitis B, and then you'll have a placebo group. This is the group that basically is going to see what happens, but nobody knows they weren't given hepatitis B. Now, this is usually not used for children or infants because they can't talk to you and give you a feedback on how they feel. But what happens is you have to have these different control groups, and the reason you have to have that is you have to see what happens to the kids. Or let's forget the kids. This experimentation on children is a nightmare. Let's say we're going to do rats. Okay, well, let's say we're going to have rats in a laboratory. We're going to have one group of rats that's going to get a placebo. And remember, the researcher in a true double-blind study, the researcher doesn't know who got the placebo, which is like a sugar pill, and who got the real drug. The researcher doesn't know that because they don't want to have skewed, biased research from the researchers. And then you'll usually have a control group that gets nothing. And now, so you have these three groups of rats, and now one of them basically, they're all injected with some disease, okay, and then all of them are basically done nothing to, given a placebo or given the real drug, and then they let the disease progress, and then what they do, they go in and they autopsy the rats, and they find out what happened with the ones that were given the vaccine, ones who got the drugs, the ones who got the sugar pills, the ones who didn't have anything, and they test it all. And then what they do is they take what's called standard deviation measures, and they find out if there's a significant difference between one group and another group, which means it tells them, hey, this works or hey, this doesn't work because we did a double-blind control research study. That's what that means. So what Austin's saying is that wasn't done. They don't do that. It's kind of like the other day when I was doing that one study that they said multiple vitamins don't work, and they did a telephone survey. So when you get all these whack bags that call you up at 6 o'clock at night when you're trying to eat dinner and you try not to answer the phone because you think it might be a friend but you're not sure because the caller ID is blocked and you have no idea who it is, and you pick it up, that's what they're doing. Those are the people who are going to the people who get sucked into the surveys are the ones asking and answering these questions on some of this stuff. And quite frankly, giving a child a hepatitis B vaccine is paramount as far as I'm concerned. Infanticide, infanticide, and also child abuse. By the way, USA Today says this. The USA is the worst place in the world to give birth to a child. There you go. A new USA investigation offers a searing indictment of maternal care in the United States, saying that this country is the most dangerous place in the developed world to give birth. Deadly deliveries. The result of a four-year investigation references federal data showing that more than 50,000 women were severely injured and roughly 700 die in the United States during childbirth every year. Perhaps even more staggering is that half of these deaths could be prevented and that half of the injuries reduced or eliminated with better care, the investigation found. These findings, based on interviews with women and a trove of internal hospital records, reveal a stunning lack of attention to safety recommendations and widespread failure to protect new mothers. Such failures also stem from inadequate or delayed responses to hemorrhages and deadly, dangerous, high blood pressure. Now, I'm going to add something else to it. How about all these doggone vaccinations we're giving these kids as soon as they're born? How about the doggone hep shot? This is why all of these things contribute to this massive infant mortality rate that we have. We have the highest infant death rate of any industrialized country. The leading cause of death in our children aged 14 and under, other than cancer and other than accidents. So the average, the life is... The leading cause of death in children 14 and under, other than accidents, is cancer. And the leading type of cancer in these kids is leukemia, which is almost always, according to Dr. Gerson, from the Gerson Cancer Research Center, a vitamin C deficiency in these children during their prenatal days inside their mama, and also not getting enough vitamin C from the breast milk because the mama's not getting any vitamin C in her diet. Why? Human beings can't make vitamin C. Other mammals can. So we need large amounts of vitamin C on an ongoing basis in order to stay healthy. Now, here's another one I want to say this about the umbilical cord. Unclamping the umbilical cord straight after birth is bad for a baby's health. In other words, if the baby comes out and you're clamping the cord within like 2 seconds, okay, that's nuts. That baby is still getting blood from its mother and oxygen from its mother. Its lungs are not fully breathing yet. And you don't want it to run out of oxygen and have brain problems. Clamping and cutting a baby's umbilical cord as soon as it is born can be bad for the health. In fact, the World Health Organization advising that clamping should be laid at least 3 minutes after the baby has been born. And a UK watchdog, NICE, advises midwives and obstetricians not to clamp the cord earlier than 1 minute after birth. I think it should be 3 minutes. But in nearly a third of the cases, this doesn't appear to be happening. A survey of 3,500 parents whose children were born in the UK between 2017 and 2017 said their baby's cord was clamped immediately after they were born. The umbilical cord consists of a vein and two arteries, which are surrounded by a gelatinous material called Wharton's jelly. A membrane called the amnion holds the whole thing together. During pregnancy, the umbilical cord vein carries oxygen-rich blood and nutrients from the placenta to the baby. And the arteries return deoxygenated blood and waste products, such as carbon dioxide, to the placenta. A baby's food supply is dependent on its mother and remains within a closed circuit throughout pregnancy, labor, and birth. As the baby is squeezed through the birth canal or an abdominal incision, if it is a cesarean birth, a lot of the baby's blood is pushed back into the placenta. But as the baby emerges, the umbilical cord is left to pulsate. All the blood returns to the baby. The cord continues to act as a baby's oxygen supply until the baby starts to breathe before the placenta becomes detached. So when a baby needs to help breathe, the cord should ideally remain intact as the baby is resuscitated on the bedside. If the umbilical cord is cut too early, a baby can be deprived of oxygen in 20 to 30% of its blood volume and 50% of its red blood cell volume. The shortage of blood will leave up to 30% of babies with iron deficient anemia. Repeat that. The shortage caused by clamping the umbilical too early can leave up to 30% of babies with iron-deficient anemia. A review of 27 studies involving 6 to 24-month-old babies by the babies with iron-deficient anemia has significantly poor brain, physical, and social and emotional functioning. Iron deficiency has also been linked to recurring infections, autism, and learning disabilities. And again, the United States is the most dangerous place, most dangerous country in the world to have an infant. Guys, this is just, all this is eugenics. These guys are trained in hospitals and medical schools. They know they can't do this. But when you have five babies that are about to be delivered, the doctor don't want to sit there for 3 minutes and wait for the placenta to stop pulsing. They don't want to do that. They're like, clamp it off. I got to go play golf. I got to get drunk. I'm going out with my sixth ex-wife tonight. You know, I got to do all this stuff. Get this baby out of here. I'm done. And that's how some of them act. You think, well, God, that's awful. Well, yeah, it is awful, actually. I talked to a physician's assistant the other day about a friend of mine who's got a problem with an ulcer, and I was at the appointment, and I see he's talking about H. pylori, and he started telling me all the stuff that was completely not even true. Not even true at all. And I start arguing with him. I told him, I said, I'm doing a naturopathic physician. I said, what are you arguing with me for? I said, this is ridiculous, what you're saying. None of it's true. So then he sends the patient to a local laboratory who's on Prilosec to get their breath tested to see if they had H. pylori bacteria in their gut, gives her the prescription for this. The person goes to the doggone the place to get the prescription fulfilled and get a test done, and they tell the person that you can't do this because you're on Prilosec, and the doctor should have known that, and you have to be off Prilosec for at least 30 days before you do this test. I mean, guy, they know he's a complete moron. Complete and total moron. So, guys, be very careful on who you choose to listen to, because a lot of these guys could just pick up the internet and pull periodicals out and learn stuff, but they don't do it. Why? They're too busy most of the time, or they don't have that curiosity they need as a physician. If every time you, if let's say, for instance, I'm a pediatrician. I'm not, but let's say if I was, and all of a sudden I'm injecting kids with vaccines. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing a perfectly normal baby, and I give them extra injection with vaccines, and 3 days later, 4 days later, a week later, they have autism. Kid was perfect until I did this to them. You know, after a couple of times, I'd be thinking, there's something wrong with these products. I can't believe I'm doing this. Why was I taught this in medical? Oh, that's right. I get $400 for every kid that gets vaccinated through Blue Cross and Blue Shield, as long as my practice has a certain percentage of children who are vaccinated. So I'm going to ignore the fact that I'm causing autism in these children. I'm just going to pretend like it's not me. I'm going to pretend like some type of mysterious, you know, ether thing in the atmosphere that's causing this rain down on the population of the planet. I'm going to pretend like I have nothing to do. What are you, an idiot? Why don't you look? Every time you hit your doggone finger with a hammer, maybe you should put the hammer down and stop using the darn hammer. Maybe you need to have somebody trained who knows how to use a hammer. Think through this and don't keep giving these kids these shots. Think through it. Oh, that's right, buddy. I get my 40,000 for every 100 people that I immunize. I get 120,000 a year if I have 300. I love the money. It's a big bonus that come in every year. What is wrong with you? You're supposed to be a physician that takes care of people who care about these children's health. Do some research, for gosh sakes, and find out that it's not okay to give these children these vaccines at this age, especially their first year of birth. Ugh, I can get hacked off on this stuff also, I tell you what. Okay, I'm done with that. Any comments? What's your next story?
Well, yeah, one thing I want to add to it, that was excellent with the umbilical cord, because that was something that Lana and I both did with both children at the midwife. You usually want to wait until it's completely done pulsing, which can take anywhere from about 2 to 5 minutes, depending on the baby. But it is grossly important that you allow all that blood to flow back into the baby. And at the same time, what the midwives do is, as soon as the baby's born, and I mean like as soon as the baby's born, it basically goes skin-to-skin contact with the mother. And basically can lay on their chest for about 5 to 10 minutes, and that's usually after that. Then you kind of go in and make sure everything's okay. Now, again, as when there's a medical emergency or something that happened right after the birth, it's a completely different story. But as long as it's a fully non-complicated, healthy birth, it's really, really good, because what it allows to do is it allows the baby to bond with the mother. It allows them to actually attach better as far as for the breastfeeding. It also allows them to get all the blood that they need with the umbilical cord still being able to pump all that blood. So this is something, again, it takes more time when you're having a baby. It delays the entire process, and this is why we chose to do it at a midwife, because the hospitals, it's as quickly as they can get it done, so the doctor can basically leave the room and let the nurses handle. That's pretty much what it comes down to. So these guys don't like to be in the room longer than they need to be. That's why the C-section rate in the United States is absolutely through the roof, higher than any other country in the world, our C-section rate is, because it pretty much a large percentage of the births in hospitals, if I'm not mistaken, it's usually around 60 to 70% of them that are not even complicated still go in for a C-section because the birth is taking too long, longer than they want it to take, not longer than it's safely taking, but longer than they want it to take. And so a lot of times, and the issues you run into this as well, is when the women get an epidural. This is very, very common. Epidural basically is a tap in the spine that basically makes you go numb below the waist. This is what a lot of women get in the hospital so they don't feel the birth. Lana's never had an epidural. She's done it fully natural, but to each their own. The issue with this is that once you have an epidural, you lose all feeling as far as the muscle contractions, the birth contractions, basically the pushing, everything completely stops, so you don't know what you're doing at all. So the issue that happens a lot of times, and I've heard this and seen this personally, that when the girls have the epidurals, they immediately stop pushing and the contractions slow down because they literally have no idea when they're having contractions unless the nurse or the doctor is telling them. Problem is, it still makes it very difficult. So what happens is the birth slows down dramatically. Once the birth slows down and it's in the process and it slows down for much more than 20 to 30 minutes, the doctors automatically get antsy. A, they don't want to have any complications whatsoever because they don't want to be sued. B, they don't want to be there a minute longer than they have to. C, it's way easier and they get paid more money to basically have a C-section, so they immediately go, birth is taking too long, we possibly having a complication, we don't want to lose the baby, prep her for surgery, now she's having a C-section. And all of a sudden you're sitting there going, what the heck just happened? I'm trying to have the baby. No, you're having a C-section now, sorry, you need to lean back, get ready. And all of a sudden the baby comes out, you end up having a healthy baby, everything goes moderately okay, except at the end of the day, you had a C-section, you didn't even need one 80 to 90% of the time, unless there was some type of dire emergency that the baby, you know, had the umbilical cord wrapped up around its neck in the birth canal. There's some deathly issue going on, but this is so common all the time in hospitals to do C-sections when they're not necessary and to cut the birth, umbilical cord off and clamp it right after the birth as well. And in my opinion, I think that causes a lot of the health issues that we see.
That's right.
Even if the people choose not to vaccinate the baby, I've still seen health issues down the line, especially at the early time, because of these simple issues that can really be fixed just by knowing what you're doing. And if you have a good, healthy pregnancy, it really, in my opinion, starts off the child to a really good start in the future, Deb.
It does. It does. Okay, one more story for me, then I got to go. New York Times says white population in New Hampshire is a problem. You guys, I tell you this all the time. A recent New York Times Twitter says, New York and New Hampshire, like its neighbors Vermont and Maine, is nearly all white. This has posed an array of problems for new arrivals who often find themselves isolated and alone without the comfort and support of a built-in community. Reporter Matt Walsh shows that this is one of the most racist statements one can imagine and proves this by showing how it would sound if it was written about Detroit instead of New Hampshire. The issue, however, is deeper than that. Apparently, the Times believes that the skin color is the most important factor in creating a sense of community. The new arrivals described here are, of course, migrants, immigrants, who are bringing with them not only a difference in skin color, but a huge difference in culture, which they intend to replace the culture that now exists in New Hampshire with the Muslim immigrants. The fact that the Times sees skin color and any skin color of a community as a problem sees no problem with the influx of foreign cultures, which is fundamentally opposed to the traditional values of America, speaks loudly about the mindset of the paper's owners and editors. What is the mindset? It is that they are committed to a strategy of changing the traditional American culture in which there was an inward force tending to bind all citizens together by those things that have come and break common and replace it with an outward force tending to divide citizens into factions because they're easier to control, promoting those things they do not have in common. They do this because they seek fracturing and dismantling of the former unified and sovereign nation once known as the United States of America and the absorption of its leftover parts into the global government based on totalitarian model of collectivism, i.e. communism, i.e. socialism, i.e. it doesn't work and everybody starves to death. And that's what happens. It explains almost everything that is going on inside formerly powerful nations, that if they remained as they were two generations ago, they would not have been conquered by the globalists within their midst. Once you understand this strategy, you will never, ever think again that the leaders of the world or the media giants have gone mad. They know exactly what they were doing. That's a quote in an article from G. Edward Griffin. Guys, thank you so much for your prayers. I have the opportunity and the privilege to pray for you guys again today. You guys rock. I love you guys. Hope you enjoyed the show today. And also let you finish it up, and I'll do the write-up. God bless you guys, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Absolutely. Speaking of this, as far as with migrants that are causing an issue over in France, I saw a video today that somebody sent me, which is pretty crazy. There were migrants in France that were protesting against the free food and free housing that they were being given, and because they're basically being expected to work, you know, in social work and community service work now, they're basically flipping out. There are at least probably 100 or more migrants in a area of France, I think it was like Vaires-sous-Allier, over where the migrants called substandard food and work expectations of at least 7 hours a day. It was just unacceptable, they said. They said in response, the migrants basically said that they had declined in quality as far as the work due to budget cuts, and they said that basically food was not as good as they wanted and the housing was not as nice as they wanted. They said there was a lot of anxiety among residents related to the uncertainty of the future. What's crazy about it, though, is they said that basically they demanded that they get more food and they don't have to work as much. They were actually standing there basically protesting, saying more meat, less work. And so what's ironic to me about this is these people were basically claiming, supposedly, remember, that they were fleeing war-torn countries that were basically in rubble and they were starving to death, being persecuted, shot at, and full-blown war zones on a daily basis. Yet now they're in a first-world country basically getting food and housing on a regular basis and being required to work about 35 hours a week, and this is just absolutely unacceptable to them, and they do not want to deal with it. This goes to show you that a lot of them did not care at all about fleeing war-torn countries. They simply wanted to come to Europe so they could get free everything, and now that they're not getting that, they're angry about it. thought it was pretty ridiculous. Also, too, in other news in New York, as the gun laws in New York still continue to fail on a regular basis, if you guys saw last weekend, 16 people were shot over just a seven-hour period, Saturday night into Sunday morning. One of the shooting victims died, and three of them are still in critical condition. New York has some of the most stringent gun controls in the country, including a full assault weapons ban, a high-capacity magazine ban, universal background checks, and license requirement just to own a pistol. Moreover, New York maintains a statewide database of every single registered gun owner. However, they still had 16 people shot in a seven-hour period over the weekend. Again, it shows you that we don't have a gun problem. We have a people problem. We've taken the Bible and prayer out of schools. We're raising kids now in a society that basically has no morals, no ethics. We have a Miley Cyrus generation now of children that basically grew up with Hannah Montana, that they intentionally morphed into this Miley Cyrus whore now that basically runs around on giant inflatable penises, as Dad has said, and all these other weird things she has done to completely morally degrade the younger generation. And we've seen this now over the years continue to get worse and worse and worse and worse. We had some of the loosest gun laws in the entire world. Actually, we still do, especially back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, before even the machine gun ban was passed, the Firearm Protection Owners Act in 1986. You could legally go to the store and pay your tax stamp and go buy an M60 machine gun at any point in time. Yet mass shootings and school shootings were virtually unheard of in most cases. Why? Because we had a generation that was self-sufficient. They looked out for one another, they protected one another, and they had respect for one another. It's something we have failed to realize now. So just ironic when I saw that in New York. But if you guys need anything, you know where to get a hold of us, healthmasters.com. We get a lot of comments on the orders lately, on their order comments. We appreciate that. Please do me a favor. If you guys have any health concerns, especially significant ones, instead of writing me like four or five paragraphs on the order comments, just give us a call. It's much easier for us to do that. I literally read and sign and comment and try to respond back to every single order comment that we get a hold of. And when we get those long ones, I simply don't have time to sit there and write out a 20, 30 paragraph essay about all the different supplements and issues that you're trying to get a hold of. So just do me a favor on that. I would greatly appreciate it. If you guys need anything, give us a call, 1-800-726-1834, or you can go on the website and email us on the contact form. Be sure to check out the product of the week, the Vive Eye Rescue Serum. Really popular product. It's basically just started carrying it this year. We've been working on it over a year. Really helps out with wrinkles, under eye puffiness, dark circles, and it's on sale for 10% off right now on the website as product of the week. And also be sure to vote on the other products as well, including the 5-HTP, the Probiotic 350, the Cholesterol X, a lot of other products on the website to vote for. So we appreciate the support, guys. Thank you for the feedback, and thank you for your business. We really, really appreciate you guys choosing Health Masters to buy your supplements from. We love you guys. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow as always.